What is a trend? What is meant by transition? What are markers of transformation? These key terms and other topics will come up in my conversation with Professor Thomas Bauernhansel today. I would like to welcome him to our studio here at the alumni office and to everyone listening to Made in Science, the official podcast of the University of Stuttgart. Professor Bauernhansel is director of the Institute of Industrial Manufacturing and Management, IFF, at the University of Stuttgart, and also director at the Fraunhofer Institute for Manufacturing, Engineering and Automation, IPA. And most recently, he has also become scientific director for automation, robotics, clean and dry room production technology at the Fraunhofer IPA. Topics that he works on are digital transformation and manufacturing, biological transformation, automation and robotics, and strategic initiatives when it comes to sustainability. Now, today I would like to look a little bit together with you first into the future. I found three statements by you about the future, Professor Bauernhansel, and I'd like you to comment about those. The first one, sustainability is the driving force behind innovation. The production paradigm of the future, in Germany especially, will be closely linked to the issue of sustainability. Unquote. Please, could you explain, could you share your thoughts why this would be the way?
Sustainability is our core driver in production because we seek for long-term solutions. And when we want to achieve well-being for our society, and especially as a highly industrialized country like Germany, we have to focus on the balance between the economy, the environment, and our social responsibility. And this is, for me, the definition of sustainability. And we have to balance these three topics in a way that we can offer for all of these three perspectives solutions, which are designed in one system, in one production system. And that's why my opinion is sustainability has to be the core of all our developments when it comes to manufacturing.
You already mentioned the production, and that's actually my second statement that I would like to quote. You have said, quote, production will be holistic in how it is conceived and assessed. The existing strategy of pure efficiency will in future be enhanced by a new effectivity strategy. Unquote. My question is, what is this new effectivity strategy marked by, in your opinion?
When you look at the past and when you see what have we done in production in order to improve production, it was always efficiency driven. So to get better products with less material, with less energy, maybe products which can offer better solutions finally. When you look into the future and you consider the topic of sustainability, as I have mentioned, we need other solutions. It makes no sense when you look at fossil products, for example, to reduce the amount of fossil raw materials. Finally, we're using still fossil raw materials, and it's not good for our environment, right? So we have to think of new products, new processes, which allows us to use other materials, regenerative materials, for example. And then these are real effective solutions. So we're focusing not on efficiency, we are focusing on effectiveness, doing the right things and not doing the things in some way better.
This relates to the third point very well, actually. And I quote you again. This will require, you say, a large-scale use of innovative and sustainable technologies and materials, as well as holistic changes to our systems of production, use, and recycling. The paradigm change will affect all production factors, energy, material, and human resources, as well as finance, IT, planning, and control. This change is the driving force behind our research and expertise, unquote. Professor Bauernhansel, what does it take to initiate this, as you called it, paradigm change?
I think we all have to be very brave to create a change like that, because we have to get rid of old systems. We have to get rid of old investments, which is especially for the owners of the investments very, very difficult. And we have to be brave to really create new solutions, and we have to go new paths. And that means we have to convince our customers, the society, the engineers, finally, but as well the investors, to follow us on these paths in order to create a new production paradigm. And this paradigm has characteristics like circular economy, which is one very important topic, the energy change, which we see in the moment all over the world, and as well here in Germany, with energy created with the help of solar energy, for example, wind energy. And when we're talking about materials, we have to talk about recycled materials on one hand, and on the other hand, regenerative natural-based materials, which we have to use in the future. And all in all, we need new processes, new production processes, and as well new recycling processes. And in that sector, I think we will see a lot of biotechnology in the future. And that's the reason why I push the so-called biological transformation.
You have just mentioned the biological transformation. Let me take you up on that one. In a video that I watched, I think it was in 2019, when you said that, or came up with a statement that was really, for me, very surprising. Because there you talked about digital transformation and biological transformation. And now comes the surprising factor. You said that digital transformation isn't the real answer. And I thought, I'm still wondering about that. These days, 2025, I hear digital transformation all over. Even the latest commission to the German government talks about that and recommended it strongly. Then again, biological transformation is very much up in the discussion as well. Now, how do you look at the topic today? Would you still say the same quotation, the same sentence? Would you quote yourself the same way as you did in 2019?
Yes, I have the same opinion. For sure, the result of the digital transformation, the technologies we are using, the whole process of transforming industrial branches with the help of IT solutions, artificial intelligence, cloud computing, and telecommunication. This is a driving force in the moment. And as you have said, the newspapers are full with articles about this amazing trend we see in the moment, especially in the field of artificial intelligence. But with these technologies, we usually focus on efficiency. So we try to make things a little bit better, faster, processes get improved. We want to increase productivity. We want to get down costs. But normally we do not focus really on sustainability. We do not often see completely other processes. And what we need, I have already talked about that, are other processes. We need other materials. And maybe the digital transformation or the tools of the digital transformation will help us to be a little bit faster on that path, creating these new processes and products and materials we need. But it's not the core, finally.
Then how can we foster the biological transformation, say, in the fields of environment and health, which are two dominant ones, I understand. How can we make that those two perhaps even more accessible or understandable to the general public as well?
When you talk about biological transformation, there's always two perspectives. One perspective is the more technology-based perspective, and that means that we create a completely new system design by combining bioware, hardware, and software in one system design. So it's a more technical view on that topic. And that creates a bunch of new possibilities and a completely new innovation space for all of us to think out of the box and to create completely new solutions. That's one perspective. The other perspective is the value-adding perspective or the production perspective, the holistic production perspective. And in that perspective, we create more decentralized production solutions which use the resources of regions of local resources which you can find there, and you handle all the resources then in a way that you can reuse everything, and then you use these kind of processes coming from that technology perspective, but you create a kind of completely new production system which is highly sustainable on one hand, and which can produce highly personalized products finally.
Are we experimenting with this a lot at the moment?
We see in the more process-oriented industries, we see already that biological transformation. When you look at the medical sector, for example, the health sector, and we talk about so-called ATMPs, advanced therapy, medicinal products, cell, gene, and tissue therapies, these kind of therapies are all biologically transformed already. When you have, for example, an illness like cancer, these therapies allows to create a highly personalized therapy based on your own material, which the medical doctors find in your body, and then you take it out of your body, like blood cells. And then there's a gene editing process, so you really transform these cells to a higher level, and then these cells, for example, are able to attack cancer cells, and then you get your own cells back in your body, and that's the therapy which finally heals you. Yeah? And that is a completely new approach compared to all the other therapies which we usually have on our hands.
I started by talking about transition and transformation. Now, from what I hear so far, we are way beyond trends. We are approaching transformation. You have just given us excellent examples for that. Where do you see transition happening? In other words, perhaps developments that are not quite as elaborate as the ones that you have just described with regard to medicine.
When you look into the food sector, for example, I think we see in the moment as well a transition, especially when you look at the consumption behavior of the younger generation. They are focusing very much on sustainable food, and they want to eat food which is on one hand healthy, and on the other hand, which do not harm the environment by producing this kind of food. And here we see already a kind of transition in behavior, and it's society driven. It depends on the country you're living, for sure. Yeah, but in many countries, especially in Asia as well, but in Western countries as well, you find already a huge movement into that direction. And the food industry is reacting and offering more and more transformed food in a more biologically transformed, produced way.
Professor Bauernhandel, you were responsible for optimizing the global footprint of the production network throughout regions in Europe, North America, and South America, comprising over 50 production sites. So you have quite an overview, and I would expect some experience in this field. Would you please share with us what are some of the lessons that you have learned in this experience of optimizing the global footprint?
That was around 15 years ago during my time at a company named Freudenberg. What are the core lessons? For me, it was important to have a job where I'm responsibility for a specific area like production, but don't have the power on a disciplinary side, yeah, to really tell the people what they have to do. So my job was to convince managers all over the world to follow my ideas and my strategy finally by integrating all these managers and engineers and finding then the best solutions for the global footprint on one hand, but as well the best solution from a local perspective. To do so, the core learning was you have to integrate all the people in a process like that. You cannot do it centrally. You cannot decide by your own and say, okay, I know this is the best solution and now we roll it out. Even maybe it's the best solution, yeah? But you will be never successful by rolling that out in a central way. So the secret, like always, is to integrate people into a kind of innovation process, to talk to the people, to respect different cultures, to respect the different prerequisites you find in the different local areas, and then to create a solution, maybe which is not a 100% solution, but which is a solution which can be handled by all the different production sites involved in a strategy like that. And this takes time, and especially when you go to Japan. I was very often in Japan, and it was really great to see how decision processes are organized in Japan. You know, all the relevant people sit around the table and they discuss the problem several times. So when there's an issue, they discuss it three or four times in a circle. Everybody is involved. Everybody can say what is his perspective on that topic, and not only one time, two times, three times. And after maybe 2 or 3 hours, you have a clear understanding of the real issues. And then they start to discuss the solution, and everybody is involved as well several times. And then they find a solution which is carried by all the involved managers around the table. Usually it takes half a day or the whole day. But when it's decided, then the realization of the solution is very fast, and nobody will come back and will say, hey, I thought about that and maybe I have now another opinion. Can we talk again? Can we discuss again? That will never happen in Japan. In Germany, it's the other way around. You meet for 10 minutes. You one expert on the table thinks that he understand the problem fully. And then we talk maybe 2 minutes about the problem, 8 minutes about the solution. And then everybody thinks that now it's very easy to roll that solution out and the problem is solved. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, you meet again and you restart that process. And then maybe over months or even years. So, and when you travel around in the world, you can learn from different cultures how to handle issues and how to manage production sites. And for me, it was a really great time and an excellent learning phase
and education. This brings me as a lecturer back to the university here, of course. How does the mindset that you have described, not only in your last statement, but also before this transitions and transformative process in so many areas, how does this translate into education and the curriculum? Are students being trained with this new system-oriented approach you have described? Or are we still educating future entrepreneurs, tech experts, scientists with models from the 20th century? In other words, will this year's graduates be prepared to contribute meaningfully to a circular economy?
To be honest, no, I don't think so. Transformation is very fast in the moment, right? and transformation of institutions like a university or a whole education system usually takes a long time. And that is the reason why in the moment, we are definitely not fast enough. We are transforming at the University of Stuttgart and in other universities and in other institutions for sure. But I think we are still not fast enough to really fulfill the requirements of the future transformation we see. We talked about digital transformation. We talked about biological transformation, about sustainability. And I think we started to educate how to organize a circular economy. But we are still on the way improving our lectures and focusing more and more on these future topics.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me a little bit like we are transitioning in the direction of transformation. And in some areas, perhaps more transformation or transformation is somewhat closer at hand than at others.
Transformation is a systemic approach, right? And an interdisciplinary approach, finally. And when you look at the universities in Germany and in other countries, usually we have faculties, we are organized in disciplines, we have different science disciplines with different vocabulary. And that's really a challenge then to create a bachelor or a master program, integrating all the relevant disciplines, creating one vocabulary in order to find the right words in education. And these are really challenges. And in the moment, I think many researchers, scientists, they try to think in a more systemic way and to integrate their colleagues from different faculties in their approaches. But are we there already? I don't think so.
We're on the way. Yeah. That's what we're definitely here. Many go even a step further and are finding the means actually to, for their own enterprises, entrepreneurial spirit. That would be the key word here. With an average of 3.5 spin-offs per 1,000 employees, the Fraunhofer IPA in Stuttgart holds a top position worldwide in technology transfer through spin-offs from research. Why is this an excellent figure? Once again, 3.5 spin-offs per 1,000 employees.
This is an international benchmark to make this entrepreneurial power of a research institution measurable in a way. And it's 3.5 spin-offs in my case at my institute means that I have around 800 researchers at the Fraunhofer IPA, and we create between 2 and 3 spin-offs per year. And this is definitely better than the average of Fraunhofer. The average is, I think, 1.5, and even better than the MIT or Stanford in the United States. So as you already said, we are in a top position concerning that, but it's a cultural topic, finally. You have to implement in a research institution the entrepreneurial spirit, and you have to bring that into the culture of an institution. And this is a long way. I started with that 2011, and after maybe 10 years, we have now reached this top position. And for me, it's essential for an applied research institution. Because applied research, or when you do applied research, you need that entrepreneurial spirit. You need to understand your customers, your market. You have to convince investors to invest in a project. Yeah, and you have to work hard. And it's often not an easy way to bring new research ideas into real practice. And to do so, you need that entrepreneurial spirit. And that was the reason why I pushed that very much during my time now at the Fraunhofer IPA and as well here at the University of Stuttgart at the IFF.
Given that context, where do you see the relation, perhaps even the similarity, between the spirit of entrepreneurship and research?
As I mentioned, it's the same motivation. You want to change something. Yeah? in engineering science, we create artifacts, right, which really change the world and maybe makes a better place out of the world with our engineered solutions. And that means that we have to create something and that we have to bring these artifacts into the market. We need a response of the market. And so the process is more or less from terrible to a new company, a spin-off, for example, which creates as well a new product and has to bring that product as well into the market. So the driving force, the motivation is that entrepreneurial spirit to have an excellent idea and to convince people to use this new idea in order to transform something, a market, an industrial sector, or to allow completely new production possibilities. Think about robotics or recycling processes or whatever.
When you talk about motivation, you have still enough motivation to be on several important advisory boards besides your work in entrepreneurial business and research and science as well. In your personal view, where can you make the biggest difference when you are on advisory boards, especially in social or political contexts?
My ambition as a researcher is to understand the needs of the different stakeholders which we have in the society from a research point of view. So we have, on one end, we have professors doing research, we have the science. On the other hand, we have the entrepreneurs investing their time and money in order to create something new. You have the society, and you have the politicians who try to create frame conditions in order to allow more innovation in Germany. And for me, it's an ambition to understand the different driving forces, the motivations of the different stakeholders, and then to explain and convince the different stakeholders to go together in the direction of sustainable production in the way I have described at the beginning of our talk.
And obviously, that seems to work pretty well. Otherwise, you wouldn't continue doing it in this very same fashion. I wonder where your personal drive comes from, this strong idea and belief in transition and transformation. You seem to me like someone ahead of your time at moments, very much living in your time at the same time. When you look at your institute, your colleagues, your students, how do you inspire them? And where does that come from in the very person, Mr. Bauernhansel?
I think it's not only inspiration. It is as well to not demotivate the people. I think when you, nearly all of the students, of the researchers, they are highly motivated. When they come to our institute, I usually have a talk with them, and I always, these new young guns coming to the institute, they are full of ideas, they are full of motivation. And then maybe 2 or 3 years you talk to the same people and you find out that maybe the fire is not burning in the same way like 2 or 3 years ago, right? So out of my point of view, inspiration is important. You have to show possibilities and maybe how things can be done. But on the other hand, you have to do everything not to demotivate your staff, to give them the freedom to make their own decisions, also to make their own faults, finally. And as well to help maybe here and there, that they can go their way and that's enough. Yeah. The rest is intrinsic motivation deeply in our students and in our researchers.
How were you like as a student? What was student life for you like at the university? And if you would like to allow us also beyond university, what kind of hobbies did you have? Was it all steered and geared by exactly this motivation to change things? Or do we see also a student Bauernhansel who actually is more on the stable side of things?
I really enjoyed my student life at the university, and I would say it was more or less the best time of my life. You have the freedom to do whatever you want to do. It's the first phase in your life where you really can decide how to use your time. The university offers several possibilities to be curious, right? So you can have excellent discussions with professors, with your colleagues. You get to know new friends. It's not only education and writing some tests. It is as well learning more about different perspectives, different science disciplines, but as well to find your own role in the society, right? During that time, you have to think about what are the right steps for me finally, yeah, when I finish my university time, yeah, how will my life look like? Yeah? In which direction do I want to go? So this is a unique phase at the university, I think, for everybody. And I really enjoyed that time. And I did a lot of, beside university, did a lot of sports. I did a lot of partying. I traveled a lot. So I had the opportunity as well to be for 6 months in Colombia, in Bogota. That was great. I learned Spanish there. I got to know many different new friends, and I learned about different perspectives on the world. And during that time, I think, that was for me the start to go more into the direction of production technology, as well the interface between technology, organization, leadership. Out of my point of view during that time, that was an inspiring possibility to go to an additional transformation and development. And so when I came back from the university in Bogota, the Hawaiiana University there, and then I really started to work as a HIVI at an institute, which offers me the possibilities and the topics I was interested in. And then after that, I immediately started as a researcher there. And then I had the opportunity to be the group leader and department leader, and did my PhD then 5 years later. And then I started my professional life directly at the company Freudenberg. And I had the opportunity to be from the beginning on a general manager of a small company with 400 or 500 people, with 32 or 33 years old. And that was as well for me a new possibility, yeah, for transformation, for transition from the student researcher to the manager, and as well to be an entrepreneur. Because when you're responsible for a small company, then it's not only managing, it's as well creating innovation and motivating people. So that was the start of my career, and I'm still highly motivated to now.
And of course, I'm very much like to hear that it kind of started with a stay abroad during your studies. So to those of us listening here today, contemplating about going abroad for a semester or even an academic year, you see what comes out of this. Look at Mr. Bauernhansel. Please go. Now, you also mentioned just the entrepreneurial spirit at a very young age, that you had responsibilities in setting that up. You have accompanied and supported 23 startups over the past 8 years, some of them through Technology Transfer Initiative, TTI, here at the University of Stuttgart, as well as the Exist and Ahead funding programs. For the future, and this brings us back to the future, so to speak, that we started with, will you continue working along this line? Can there be an accelerated number? Or do you think this is just the right pace, given the circumstances we are experiencing, both with the standard of education, moving in the right direction, but at a certain level? Or do we have to change gears?
Yeah, we have to change gears and we have to accelerate. I think 2 years ago, I got a prize for my activity as a professor who pushed the entrepreneurship at the university. So it was a prize called Unipreneur. And I wondered why I was elected or selected with 20 other professors in Germany. I think there are 55,000 professors in Germany. And I think 5,000 were nominated and 20 finally got this prize. And I was one of them. And I said, when I'm selected for that prize, that's really a bad sign for Germany. Because I have so many different activities and it's only one small part of my daily work to really help young people, researchers, to create their own businesses. It's important for me, and I love to support young entrepreneurs, but it's not the only thing I'm doing. And when I look around here in Stuttgart, we have excellent circumstances here. The university is a great place. We have these different other research institutions like Max Planck, Fraunhofer, DLR, you name it. We have all these nice companies around us, automotive, machine building, engineering, and. So it's an excellent place. And as well, we have a lot of money here in the region. And so it's an excellent place to really found a company. But we are still not really using that potential. And we are not so visible in that area. So when somebody says, oh, location Stuttgart, I don't know if the first idea somebody has is, oh, that's an excellent place for creating a startup, right? And so that means we have to accelerate that process. And in my area, I have created now my own incubator at the Fraunhofer IPA. So I have a team of 5 people focusing only on pushing and helping entrepreneurs to create their own company. It's not an internal activity. It's an open activity. So students from anywhere and entrepreneurs from anywhere can come to us, and we help them to create their own business, and we help them to find money, and we consult them in order to create their own business models and business plans, and.
For the final part of our conversation, we have a segment called Moment 7. We have collected 7 questions that we would like to ask you, and please answer them as shortly as possible. Moment 1. Spätzle or Maultaschen?
Maultaschen.
Moment 2. One thing you could change about the world would be?
Maybe bring back into the society more behavior of truth.
Moment 3. Do you have a recommendation for us for a book, a piece of music, movie, theater visit, museum visit?
Maybe a book which I read just a few months ago. February 33 is the name of the book. It's about the change in Germany when Hitler took over the power, and it describes in a very good way from a perspective of artists and people who are engaged in culture how their life have changed within 3 or 4 months. And that was for me very impressing, and it showed that we have to do everything to beware our freedom.
Moment 4. The best advice that you have ever received was?
The best advice was from my boss at Freudenberg. He said, it's not enough to be successful. You have to have the right story as well.
Moment 5. Your favorite place at the university is which one?
The favorite place is the place when all the places at the university where I am able to educate students. That's the best place for me.
Moment 6. If I could start all over again, I would do the following differently.
I think that's a very difficult question. And to be honest, I think I would do everything like I've done it.
And moment seven. Please complete also this sentence. Thanks to my studies, I know that.
We have to keep moving in order to keep our balance.
Professor Bauernhansel, thank you for sharing your view on the world of today and tomorrow, and giving us an idea, and perhaps even more than an idea, about the necessities upcoming to go for the transformations in our world and what we can expect in the future.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
And to our audience, please stay tuned for our next conversations that are always based on what is made in science.